and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Hornetal. I have left Walt Whitman Brewery, where we did the Horse Players Happy Hour tonight. I'm back in the degenerate flophouse. We're moving on to hour 13 of the working day. That's what happens on the Thursday before Derby. But I was tired before, I'm not going to lie. But I was like getting a shot in the arm, the anticipation for me of sitting down with the two gentlemen who are going to be here with me for the next 30 or 40 minutes or so. This is a show that we did around Breeders' Cup time, and it was sort of an experiment then, but it worked well enough that we're deciding to bring it to you again for the Kentucky Derby. You could call it a pro player roundtable with me as the moderator, and our two pro players. We'll start off with a man who you heard, actually you've heard both these voices pretty recently on the network, but this guy was just on the early week Players podcast going over some stuff with me. From Lexington, Kentucky, professional horse player Sean Borman. Sean, how are you?
I'm great, Pete. How are you doing?
Things are good. Tired, but excited. Excited about this weekend of betting action. There's really some interesting stuff going on all over. So weird being the closing weekend at Saratoga and also Derby weekend. Not something I'm eager to soon repeat, but trying to have fun with it while we can. And speaking of Saratoga, our next guest hails from very near to this place, and I know that the race course is pretty much of a home away from home for him most years. I'm assuming not so this year. He's a former NHC champion. He's a horse player advocate. He's an all-around good guy, professional horse player Paul Matisse. Paul, what's up?
What's going on, Pete? What's going on, Sean?
Hey,
good
Paul.
To be here with you guys.
It's definitely a fun and a little bit different way of talking about the races. You know, on some shows, some formats, folks are obligated. I'm not knocking. I mean, some people love this, to give their 1, 2, and 3 picks in the race, and then that we leave the audience to go and do with that what they will. But in this case, I want to get a little more involved in the betting side of things. I'm not saying you can't give handicapping rationale on a horse if you want, but I'm more interested in just how you view these races more holistically. Is this a good race to get involved in verticals? Is there a potential, you know, long shot to run third or fourth? Is this a race you might be able to lock up in pick bets? Is this a race where you could single in a pick bet? Is this a race where you have to spread or anything in between? I just want to get some thoughts. Or is it a pass race? That's also a completely acceptable answer on a show that you're looking at from a betting perspective. And we'll start off with our first stake on Saturday at Churchill. It is the Grade 2 American for three-year-olds going a mile and a 16th on the turf. Paul, I'm going to start with you. Is this a race you have much interest in wagering on?
Actually, I don't think it's a great betting race. I wouldn't talk somebody off of it if they had an opinion. To me, it looked pretty straightforward that the two favorites are the best two horses. And if I was doing, I don't know about this one, but it's probably a good race in this kind of sequence because it kind of, I think those two will probably get you through, and then you know, you try to make something happen in a different leg. But I'm interested to hear if you or Sean came up with anything different, because to me it appears like it's the 4 versus the 5.
I felt
field
similar.
Pass versus smooth leg straight.
Yeah, I felt very similar. It felt like a potential lockup race, but interestingly, in terms of the late picks, now I haven't even gotten that really into the brass tacks of the middle of this card. So maybe there's something that pays off here where you could try to lock it up with those two. But in terms of locking it up going forward, we don't have a pick 5 starting here. Though there is a pick 4, and perhaps there'd be some value with that. But maybe, Sean Borman, you have a more creative view than either of us. Is this as simple as field pass and smooth like straight and move on?
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. I can't see much else in there I'm interested in. I would have a slight lean to field pass of those two, and maybe would press that one above the 5. But there's nothing else I want out of here.
So I think we all see it.
Yeah, I agree with what Sean said too. I think maybe the whole key to the race is that maybe they'll go a little too far with the 5 versus the 4 because he beat him. And I don't think it's that clear cut that the 5 is better than the 4. So maybe I'm with Sean. That may be the way to play it. Maybe tilt towards the 4.
Sometimes in these instances when they come up on the shows when JK is on, when it's two clear ones like this, he heavily advises picking one or the other. It's typically my inclination to play both and get through and maybe press one a little bit as opposed to just singling one and completely fading the other. What do you think about that idea in general, Paul, when you have a race with two very strong contenders? Are you inclined to try to select one, or are you more inclined to just try to lock up a race with two where possible and be done with it?
Well, when I don't have a strong opinion on the two, I think I agree with you, especially if you got opinions other places. You know, you don't want to lose. I think I used it in your pick five with Chris there, the pick five segment that we did.
Yes.
That was more of a written thing on in the money. I actually used this example. You know, do you want to lose a pick five because you didn't? You threw out Easy Goer and used Sunday Silence, you know, only, you know, or vice versa, you know. Doesn't make sense to me, you know, especially one that's going to pay $10,000. You want to risk that there, you know. I think it's such a simple race to cover. Why make it harder than it is? And then you can, like you said, weigh it differently. Make sure that you win more if the one that you like wins. Now, if you're totally fading a different horse, that's a totally different situation, because
sure,
then you can create value, because most people will see it the way that you and I are seeing this race. If somebody out there has got this strong opinion, they saw Smooth Like Straight work out badly last time, and they have an angle that they're against or against Field Pass, go for it if you have that opinion. I don't have that opinion. It doesn't sound like that anybody on this call has got that opinion, so that's why I wouldn't do it. You know, I wouldn't force myself to pick one.
That was purely theoretical about Smooth Like Straight, I assume?
Yeah, I know no knowledge of that. Yeah,
I just wanted to clarify, if listeners were furiously scribbling notes, I didn't want them to. You're talking in theory. If you have a reason to fade one of the big two, all the
right,
better.
Exactly.
But there's no reason to cut off your nose to spite your face. And that's exactly
Absolutely.
The kind of like little side conversation I'm hoping that talking about these races we could promote. We could come here and give you all the reasons why those two were the two. You can hear that on 17 other podcasts. But to hear advice from Sean and Paul about how to approach these sequences, that's the kind of stuff that'll hopefully help you on Saturday and also help you as a horse player going forward. Speaking of going forward, I think it's time. Let's move on to race number 9. It's the Grade 2 Pat Day Mile. Three-year-olds going a mile on the dirt. And Sean, very curious to get your thoughts on this one. My eyes are very much drawn to Rushy. Very curious to see where you stand.
You know, I don't have a great opinion in this race. I'm a little interested in Rushy. I'm a little interested in Sonoman as a more underneath kind of price horse to fill out tries and supers. But I, you know, as far as horizontal stuff, this would be a spread, like a weighted spread race to me. I just don't have good, strong opinion here at all.
Who are some of the numbers that would be in that weighted spread on top that you would also presumably be using to get Sonoman to run with underneath in your verticals?
You know, I would definitely use the 2 Echo Town, the 4 Vertical Threat, 6 Tap It to Win. That would probably be it. I might use Digital on some tickets and not others. That he would be my least of the uses, but I'm going to try to fade Saison. I don't like that horse at all.
Paul, how do you see the Pat Day Mile?
I think this is a really important race on the card for lots of reasons. And I think it's a really interesting race because I think most people take a look at the 3-year-old shorter race and they automatically assume it's a sprinter and they kind of lump them all together. But this is a mile. It's not the 7 furlongs that you see at the Allen Jerkins or even maybe in the springtime when the race is the 7 furlongs on some of these other cards, like the Belmont. This is it's a full mile. And I have an opinion that the horses that are coming out of that race, the Allen Jerkins, aren't going to make it a mile, not in this type of field. So that's I have a kind of a different – I agree with what you said about Rushy. He's the one that's the most interesting to me. I don't 100% trust him, but I think he could actually dominate the race. It wouldn't shock me if he would be the one that I would say be the most sound winner. But I think the idea is to bet against all the horses out of the Jerkins race. And also, I kind of agree with Sean that Cezanne is probably a throwout, except with, and I wanted to ask you on this too, because he's exiting a race that came up fast that I didn't believe as for a figure. And it's going to play into at the Derby,
mm-hmm.
because the two horses that are coming out of that race, we haven't had any really thing to go by at all with that figure. And I know the Racing Form did it one way and some other people did it a different way. And I was pretty much, I just took it out completely and didn't believe that it was anywhere near as fast as it came up. So I'm really curious to see how Cezanne runs, because if he runs good and that figure comes up, the horses that in the Derby have much more of a chance. And I think if he runs badly, it'll be a bad sign for them. I think it's a really important race as far as it goes to the Derby. Now, as far as betting the race, I think that Sean's bomb, Sonderman, has a chance, and I agree with him. It's more probably a chance in the verticals. But the horse I like is Digital, the one he didn't like as much. I think they've been pointing for this race a long time out. He's working really good. I love the way that how the race is going to set up for him. Last time he got rebuffed by Echo Town when they faced each other, but that was a different scenario where Echo Town had an easier lead, where he's not even going to have the lead this time. So now we're going to have a completely different scenario. So the fact that he rebuffed him and kind of made it look like he was the better horse, I'm not buying 100%, especially in a situation where both of them are closing. So, and he couldn't be working any better, and the barn's going good. They want some with everything they've run basically here lately. So I think Digital is a really good chance in this race. I'll probably go mostly with 5-9 in the horizontals, but I think it's a good race to maybe, you know, fade some favorites.
Sean, let's go back to you about the figure for the shared belief. I assume from the fact that you don't like Cezanne here, like Paul, you either didn't believe that it came back as fast as commercial figure makers had it, or the raw math suggested it should be, or that you had another view on this figure from the work that you do. For those that don't know, both Sean and Paul make their own individual figures, so it's always really fun when they, and that's something I encourage you both to do, ask each other questions too. I like the round table concept. It doesn't just have to be me with the microphone here, but give us your insight into the figure and the shared belief, especially with insight towards the Derby a little bit later.
Well, you know, it's actually funny because Paul and I discussed this figure, you know, pretty in depth back in August. And I'm, you know, I agree with him. I don't really understand how they even made it a fast figure. It nothing that I saw indicated that should be a fast race. So, you know, my figures are low on the Derby horses and on anything coming out of that race. But Paul made a really good point about Cezanne's performance. If he runs well, then, you know, there's always the chance that we're wrong, and you're going to have to upgrade those horses in the dirt. I've never liked that horse. I don't think he's that good. So, you know, right or wrong on the figure, I'm still going to be against that horse.
Sounds like an easy fade for you. Let me clarify. Did you numerically, Paul, like according to your methodology, did you have the figure faster too, but you didn't believe it, or did you just not believe the commercially available figure?
No, I did some weird things with that day. You know, if you go a straight variant for the day, it's going to come up fast. I think what Sean meant was it didn't look fast, and I agree with him. It didn't look like a good race when we were watching it. You know, and that's kind of what we discussed before. I kind of asked Sean if he thought the race was any good, and he kind of confirmed what I thought, that it wasn't. However, you can be fooled doing these figures. You know, that's the thing. I mean, Sean would be the first one to admit, but this wouldn't be the first time both he and I are wrong. I agree with him though. We have this opinion that we don't believe in that race. So, you know, you bet against them in the race, but you're also cognizant of what's going on, because if you are wrong, you know, you just don't throw your sheets up in the air and say, I don't understand what happened, but I wasn't wrong before. No, we can be wrong. And it's one of the reasons I have for not believing that figure is I don't believe Cezanne moved forward. you know, he ran last. So you have to go into this belief that Cezanne ran his lifetime top while running last and not doing much, you know. But, you know, you can be fooled doing that. And if that happened, he's going to – and here's the thing that's clear to me, is if that we're wrong, he's going to do good in this race.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep. He almost has to.
You know, I mean, that, yeah, he's going to have to.
If that figure is correct, the commercial figure.
Right. If the commercial figures are right, he's supposed to do good in this race, you know. So it's kind of like one of those things where, all right, we're betting against it, but it's like in the middle of a poker hand, you know. Well, I don't believe you that you have it, but I'm going to watch how you bet the next on the turn, you know, and maybe you'll convince me otherwise, you know.
That's great.
The same type of thing. Maybe Cezanne will convince us otherwise, but at this point, I think he's bluffing.
It's great stuff, guys. And you know what's very convenient about this is this race goes, and then you'll have this valuable piece of information before the late pick five comes up. So you have an opportunity to factor it right
great.
In. And then the race that kicks off that late pick five is our 10th, two-year-olds. It's the grade three Iroquois. This is a race where my opinion was exceptionally boring, and I thought the favorite looked certainly worthy of inclusion, if not keying the 10, the ride of a lifetime. But, Paul, I'm going to let you kick off. What is your inclination about these two-year-olds on Saturday and how we're going to kick off this late pick five?
Well, we're going to bore everybody because I got more figure questions for
No, people for love
Sean.
It.
I've had a hard time with these 5-furlong races at Ellis, especially these two-year-old ones. They're all coming up slow. But as we saw today, the Roman's horse who won the two-year-old filly race, she ran way faster than what she did in Ellis in the 5-furlong race. And I suspect that a lot of these 5-furlong Ellis horses are going to run a lot better in this race. You know, the thing about this race that I used to get fooled by horses like the 10 all the time because he's got a huge figure edge. He might even be an omni figure, but it's two-year-olds and it's early two-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And these horses always lose, you know, especially if they're like downline horses who aren't winning. You know what I mean? Like the ones that are running higher figures and running second in stake races and stuff. You know, over time, I've noticed that these are horses that you want to bet against. With that being said, I don't know exactly which one to play. So, but I don't. My just gut feeling is don't trust the 10.
I certainly wasn't going to want a single. I'll say that much. And your words of caution have already got me thinking twice about this. So Sean, speak to Paul's point about the 5-furlong races at Ellis, and then segue that into your thoughts on the ride of a lifetime and the rest of these runners in the Iroquois, and then we'll come back and hold Paul's feet to the fire a little bit before we move on.
Well, I mean, the majority of my 5-furlong figures are coming back slow too, and it's tricky because, you know, you hate to say it, but it's Ellis Park, so a lot of you know, Ellis will always give you one or two good horses a season come out of there, but most of those aren't going to be top-tier two-year-olds moving forward. So it's very, you know, it's hard to know if there's some figure reason why the figures are coming slow or if it's just a talent reason. And, you know, the way I look at things, I'll lean more on my late pace figures, you know, that I sometimes describe as like a talent indicator more than just a pure figure to tell me if the horse is better than that slow figure might look or something like that. So, you know, I think Paul is exactly right about the 10. Those horses are totally untrustworthy. And, you know, I've made a great deal of money over the years just betting on horses that have on two-year-olds that have already been the distance, that have proven they can go two turns or proven they can run a mile already. Even if their figures are low, they just have an advantage over these sprinters with flashy figures. So, I don't trust a 10 at all in here. But my problem is I don't trust anybody in here.
And sometimes I know when you're in that instance – where you don't trust any, you end up leaning back on speed. So it's a tricky situation. We'll come back to Paul for a minute to just ask you who would be. I assume if you don't like the 10, you're probably looking to spread at least a little bit in here. How many runners do you think you would want to kick off these pick five tickets? And, you know, if it's half the field, it's half the field. I'm curious. The nature of this, once again, I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire for a pick, but I am going to hold your feet to the fire for a strategy.
Well, I have some edges, but I have some, slight selections. But the thing I just wanted to add is, you know, it's kind of like with that pick five thing that we did with Chris, same type of thing. This is a perfect example of a speculation race to me. There's no way you're tying this race up. Mm-hmm. And there's no way you're having, like you're seeing what Sean and I are going through. You're not going to have a strong opinion. If you do and you hit it, great, but I think it's more luck than anything. There's no way you could come to this race and say, I love this, you know, and I'm going to base my whole day around it. You know, I think that's a mistake. But the problem is you have to speculate, because I don't think it's a tie-up. You know what I mean? So
yes.
I think this is where I'm trying to get better at this speculating stuff. I know that there's other people better than it than me. But one of the things that I have for my opinion as far as the race, and I know it's one of the words I'm going to use, is that Steve Asmussen has all the good two-year-olds. he has them all that's run. And he chose the one that he won at Texas with his son, and the horse that I guess that maybe Sean likes, who won at the distance. And I guess maybe I would just go with the fact that I'm going to go with Asmussen, trust in him, because he could have run something else that's a lot flashier in this race and pretty much sewn it up. So I'm a little surprised at his strategy that these are the two that he would pick for this race, but it's almost like he's got some. He must have more confidence in him than I do. So I'm kind of like, you know, an Asmussen we trust type of thing.
That's the
one Roman's horse. I was wondering what Sean had for a late pace thing. That was my kind of trick to ask him about these five for long turf races. I know his late pace stuff is better than mine, and I was wondering about the one Roman's horse that that actually Talamo is going to ride. That kind of looks like the filly that won today. Maybe. His late pace stuff was pretty good, because if it was, I could be sold on that one too.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's adequate, I would say, in this field. You know, I'd prefer to see it a little better, Paul, but he's caught the right field. And I like that he's finished well. I had him slightly against the track last time, and you know, there's only like two or three horses in this race that are, you know, that are upliners. They're all downline horses, and I think just the fact that he's finished a race, you know, not finished across the line, but has finished in a race before, makes him, you know, very live.
Just to define terms for listeners who might not know, the idea of an upline is, and we're talking about looking at internal pace figures and a final, a horse whose figures are getting faster the way the race goes, suggesting there's more in the tank, as opposed to a downline where they're peaking somewhere short of the final distance, suggesting quite possibly that this would be a horse suited by a cutback. Am I describing that terminology, that jargon, enough to both of your satisfaction?
Perfect. You got it perfect.
I do. It is what I do, trying to interpret the words of people that are much smarter than me and explain them to the masses. It's kind of my bag, so I'm glad I got that right. So, Paul, and also just to sum up, Paul, looking at the two Asmussen runners, that would be the three. That would be the three who my eyesight's going. I had to make it bigger to see if it was Super Stock or Super Shock. It was Super Stock, the three, and then also Midnight Bourbon. Great name for Midnight Bourbon, the eight. And then we're also talking about maybe Paul mentioning that Ultimate Badger, the four. Sean, you said almost all of these are downliners, but there's a couple of upliners. Who are they, and will they end up on your tickets?
Yeah, one other horse I wanted to mention was the five Dreamer's Disease. And, you know, this horse, his good races on turf, so there's just like Paul was saying, there's definitely speculation involved, but he's an upliner. He's been the distance. You know, Diodoro, you know, like him or not, the guy can win races. So that's a horse I'm going to make sure I use, as well as the other three Paul mentioned. Those would be my top four choices, actually.
Paul, let me ask you a quick breeding question. I know that's something that you follow very closely. I know the Laubans have been doing well first out. Would you expect Dreamer's Disease to be able to transfer this form from turf to dirt based on what you've seen from the Lauban runners so far?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting idea that Sean has with that horse, because he ran probably faster than anybody but the 10 on the turf, you know. So it's an interesting, and like he said, he finished good and he got the distance, and you know, I think he'll be able to handle the dirt.
Earlier today, wasn't there a Lauban that won the off the turf stake at Saratoga today?
Yep.
That sounds right. Yeah, so there's another data point in the favor of this one being able to transfer the form. So some very good ideas there from the team. Excited to see how it plays out. That's also a win in your in race for the Breeders' Cup. We'll throw that in there to give a plug for that program as well. Let's talk about the second leg in the late pick five. I think we're going to go a lot longer than I told you guys. I hope you don't mind. I'm just having too much fun really getting into the brass tacks, and I don't want to rush you guys. So if anybody has time concerns, you know, let me know, and we'll start trimming it up. But if not, we'll move right on to race number 11, which is the Distaff Mile, a grade two, going 1 mile on the turf. And Sean, we'll start with you. What's your general approach going to be to this race? Is it as simple as newspaper of record and move on?
Well, I mean, hasn't JK crowned her Horse of the Year already?
I think he's given her the Breeders' Cup a mile, so it's come pretty close.
That's what it was. Okay. yeah. Always love to tease JK. She looks awfully tough. It seems to me like she's sort of come back to the good newspaper of record, and if that's the case, I don't see her getting beat.
She is who we thought she was. That was my line on her this year, and it's been fantastic watching the partnership with Irad Ortiz blossom. I mean, it was so frustrating last year watching the wrestling match between them, which couldn't have been good for anybody, but to me, newspaper this year, yes, she's won on the lead, but she now gives the impression of one who could rate if that was the task required. Of course, it is a little interesting and maybe doesn't make me feel great. Nothing against Javier Castellano, but it does seem quite possible that she's a bit of a tricky ride and that Irad had her figured out. We'll go to you, though, Paul. Are Sean and I too blue sky when it comes to newspaper of record in the spot, or is this a place where you can really get skinny?
I think it might be, because she's got things to prove here. You know, I'm not in the camp of JK that she's an automatic Breeders' Cup winner yet. I think this is a real test for her, this race, and I don't like playing real short odds horses when they're getting a test, because like what you said, I think you hit the proverbial nail on the head. She might not get the lead here. You know, mm-hmm. She's had two ideal setups in her last two on soft turf, you know, which she obviously prefers. I'm not sure she needs a soft turf, but she does. She definitely prefers it with a little go in it. And I think the horse that Mike Smith is on is going to give her a hard time. I don't see how she's going to take back in this race. So, and there's actually some other speeds too, a little bit here and there. So it's not like it's going to be a cakewalk on the lead. So, I think that's the question that she's got to answer. You know, with my handicapping in this race, I had a little bit of a problem because I really would have liked this race if it was run in 2019.
What do you mean by that?
The three and the six, there are races and forms in 2019. That's Juliet Foxtrot and Beau Recall. If I had faith in that they were going to show up with their 2019 form, like if we were betting this race last year after, you know, like let's say a year ago, I mean, they would have been big favorites over newspaper record. And it wouldn't even, I don't even think it would have been a question about it. They were so sharp and they were doing so good. And you kind of gotten where newspaper record has gone with these two really good races, and they've gone kind of with these sour races, and you don't know where they stand. So, however, these are situations where you can find, you know, if you have an opinion, I know one thing I was going to do is I was going to dig deeper and watch those replays on those two horses on the races this year, and I didn't get a chance to do it. So if somebody out there has a firm opinion on why those two horses haven't run to their form and think they're going to run back to what they were doing in 19, I would go with it. And this is a type of race where you could really score out if you have that type of opinion. I'm not there yet because, like I said, I'm just not sold that those two horses are as good as – but I think their 2019 form wins this race, either one of them. So I can't be more help, I guess, to you right now, but I am going to do a little more research. And there is some theory in there. And everybody can make their own decision based on it. But I think they're the three horses that are the only three that can win. And you can kind of but I think you want to zero in. I don't think this is the type of one of these races where you want to lock it up or spread. I think you kind of want to zero in on what your opinion is. If you guys have the opinion on the four, then you go there. But if somebody else has opinion somewhere else, I think this is the type of race where you want to go for one of the three.
Sean, let me ask you this. You know, you're fairly strong on newspaper, as am I. What percentage of your money do you see running through her in this spot? I mean, allowing for the possibility of some backups. Is it 50-50, 80-20, or are you willing to properly single?
I will not properly single her, only because I think I can lock some of these other races up. You know, I'm just going to single Tis the Law in the Derby, and maybe there may be one other horse later. I'm going to single Cold. So I would say maybe 50% her and 25% those other two.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head.
We're not going to hold you to this. There's a lot more to be done between now and the time this race goes off at 4:39. On Saturday. But do those ratios sound about right to you, Paul? I mean, you'd still, or are you more opposed to newspaper than that?
Well, I'm not there yet. Unfortunately for the podcast, I'm not there yet what I'm going to do exactly. But
gotcha.
I think Sean makes a good point. I think this is the type of race, you know, when you're doing these horizontals, you almost got to look at what you have in other races, you know. And I know one thing that I'm going to tell you later on. I'm going to use two horses in the Derby. I'm going to use one that's real short and one that's real long. And I know one thing I'm going to do. With the real long one, I'm not going to lose in this race, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm on the short one, I think you got to pick, you know.
That's interesting.
And these are the things, these sequences that you have to make these decisions, you know. It's never like all just cut and dry, you know. All the other races have an impact on what you do. In some of these races.
I love that point. I can be too cookie cutter even in the stuff I advise on the Stronach show or elsewhere, and it's much smarter to really get down to a race where you have a strong opinion and looking at it exactly like that. We'll talk about it more when we get to the Derby, but you might have an opinion on a day that if that horse wins, you pretty much want to hit it. You want that horse with every A, B, and C, even though that's not the way that ticket maker is going to churn it out. Or you might have two strong opinions, and it's the same deal. If these two win, you want everything that you think has a pulse in every other leg because your opinion is so strong there. And I think the more you can be nimble and flexible when it comes to your approach to tickets, this is something I've learned from both of you guys talking about it over the years. And I still, even knowing it, it's not easy to implement into one's game, but it's a very smart thing to talk about and think about and try to put into action. I think we should move on. Let's go on to our next race, which is a grade one, race number 12. It's the Derby City Distaff going 7 furlongs on the Churchill Dirt. And Sean, we'll kick it back to you. This is a race, if folks didn't hear the RacingPicks.com show, JK called it his best bet of the weekend on number 10 CC. I can definitely see where he's coming from with this runner and her attributes. And I guess this has been something that Michael McCarthy's been talking about since the spring. He was concerned she might not like the deeper tracks in California and said all along, if it doesn't work out, at home the idea of a race like this at 7 furlongs back in a Midwestern circuit would be one for her. I think it could trip out for her as well. He has me kind of convinced that CC is one to key around in here. But Sean Borman, what do you think about this one?
No, I think this is a really interesting race, and I think it's, you know, has the potential to have a very bad favorite in Serengeti Empress. I think everybody's inclination off the ballerina is going to be to upgrade her because of the fast pace, but I have a theory that she got the exact scenario that she needs to win last time, and the fast pace, in my mind, just benefited her and did not hold her back. So I think she's a total downgrade, and I'm just going to throw her out. I don't like her at all. I'm the most interested in Mia Mischief, because I think she can get first run on Serengeti, and I think she's got the potential to outfinish the rest of this field with that trip. But I'm also a little interested in Sally's Curling, and I'm interested in CC, but not nearly as much as JK is.
Bellafina, you it seems conspicuous in her being left out of that conversation from you. Is she one that you're against after failing to get the job done last time against Serengeti Empress?
Yeah, she's a sucker horse to me. She doesn't, she appears on paper like she finishes, but when you look at her actual finish on my stuff, she just doesn't finish. And that's exactly why she didn't go by Serengeti Empress last time. She ranged up and she hung. And that's, there's horses in this race that can finish, and I don't think she's one of them. So I sort of anticipate her to do the exact same thing. I think she's going to range up and not find like she's been doing lately. She's another one that's very situational. She needs the exact right situation to win races, and I don't think this is it.
Paul, how do you see the Derby City Distaff?
Well, I think I agree with everybody that this is a great race to bet. And I think CC, just going with CC, is the easy way out, because I actually see her as maybe being the favorite. What do you guys think?
I think it's possible. Because there's a lot of buzz about her.
That's interesting. Yeah, she have good workouts or something? I mean, that's the kind of thing that kind of buzz on top of everything else could lead to that. I thought Serengeti would be favored because you've got, an Oaks winner who just won another grade one, who's a seeming upgrade. I was thinking they'd come for her in a big way.
Maybe, but I'm not, CC ran against Serengeti and beat her by like 100 lengths, right, in the throat one earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of stare out. I actually think CC's going to be the favorite. So that's kind of where, you want to take 9-5, 2-1 on her,
I like 3-1 a lot better, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, and I don't think you're getting that. So, and I also, I'm not thrilled with 7 furlongs with her, even though I understand the cutback and everything, but I'm not convinced it's like a guarantee that she's a better one-turn horse and she's a better 7 furlongers. And also, she could get floated out, on this Churchill track on, I don't know, I was going to ask you on this earlier too, but I know we've been taking too long. The track started off.
The listeners don't mind, and I don't mind if you guys don't mind. So don't worry about that.
I'm having trouble here with the biases at the last few days at Churchill and what the track's like. But I do know that if you can get hung out, there's an out of bounds even when, and with Bellafina to her inside, I'm not convinced. It's going to be the greatest scenario. And even if it was like a closer's race or track, you've got two other horses that are going to come. If Bellafina and CC actually get to Serengeti and Mia Mischief and go by him, there's some real horses that can come at him too. So it's not like, all right, the race is over at that point, like a lot of times on those outside flow races. So the more I look at this race, the more I don't think it's as simple as just take CC, even though maybe that was my first inkling when I looked at it. And, I too am interested in Sally's Curling, and I'm getting more and more interested in Bell's the One, who ran this humongous figure two starts ago that I don't know exactly where it came from, but she's a filly that turned four, and then she had no chance in the race in her next race because the pace just didn't work out at all, and with the trip when she had to quicken in the race, she got shuffled, and it was a race that didn't work out for her at all. So I'm actually leaning more towards her. And then, you know, I was starting to think that Bell's the One's figure was strong because it was a 6 furlong race. And it was like one of these things where she likes to go shorter even though she's a closer. But if you look at her form, I don't think that's the case the more I look at her. So I think this is a very intriguing race. And, you know, I Mia's Mischief is an interesting horse, too, if they did the right thing. But I have no faith in all that they're going to do the right thing. You know, like, if it was a rider, like an old-school rider, like Angel Cordero was on the one, and you knew that they were going to go and put Saragini Empress away in the first quarter and then try to hang on, I thought, it would be interesting to take a shot with her. But I don't like her rating in and behind horses at all. And if that's going to be their strategy, I don't like it. And my guess is that that's what they'll do. So, so I don't have any faith in there. But this, to me, is more like of a spread race. The more I look at it, this is a race where you were talking before, where I think I'd spread in the picks and hope to get Bell's the One or Sally's Curling.
Yeah, a couple of interesting runners at double-digit odds for you. Real quick, Sean, about Mia Mischief. What kind of trip do you imagine for her? You said first run before, so I am imagining you think they're going to let – do you imagine they'll let Serengeti go and try to get – outside of her and hope she doesn't see it out, or where would you like to see Mia Mischief positioned?
I'm guessing that's exactly what they do. I've got to think everybody in the race just thinks it's a suicide mission to just send into her, you know, because Amos has made it so clear over and over and over again, they're going to the lead. So I think what Ricardo's going to do is just let her go, clear everybody else, which really shouldn't be that difficult, and then flop out, you know, the classic Naira ride where you're going to take the inside speed but flop outside and be in the three path or the two path and just sit there and wait for her to start stopping. That's sort of what I'm envisioning.
Paul had his question before about the Churchill biases the last few days. What have you had it as, Sean?
I had it pretty strong inside the first 2 days, but I thought today it was starting to even itself back out. I don't think it was like exactly even. I think you still wanted to save some ground today, but I don't think it was as strong, and it seemed to be getting weaker as time has gone on. But if it's even today's track, if it's the same track on Saturday that it was today, you know, CC and Bellafina could be up against it, because I don't think you want to be 4 and 5 wide all the way around the trip right now at Churchill.
Does that match what you were seeing, Paul, that you were having trouble making sense of? I mean,
I definitely agree exactly with what Sean was saying, except that, you know, I don't really have a good feel of where the track is going, you know, like, because I agree with him. The first day it was real strong, you know, the inside, and it's progressively gotten almost nothing. I just find it more uneven and not going in a direction, you know. So that's why I'm having a hard time trying to figure out what's going to happen tomorrow and Saturday. You know, it's kind of like maybe by this time Saturday, you know, we'll be in tune to what's going on, but. Right now, trying to do this now, I've had a hard time figuring out where it's going
to
go.
Feel free to continue the conversation on Twitter for all the folks out there to get your 2 cents on it, though. No obligation, of course. You're very kind to give us all this time and drop all this knowledge a couple of days out, and obviously things are going to get crazy. But it is a big question, especially as we approach the Derby. But before we get to that, let's talk about the Grade 1 Turf Classic going a mile and an eighth on the Churchill turf. Paul, what's your general approach to this race? I was hoping maybe we could get a little creative anyway.
Absolutely, except I'm going to get creative and pick Chad Brown. How do you like that?
Well, I'm glad you did, because this was the horse JK and I argued about on the other show, with me liking this horse and the turn of foot showed, and him being, he was a little hung up on the narrative of this one going to Monmouth the last day, but I thought maybe that was an indicator that the horse is going to improve massively today, that the horse was, you know, sort of sent to a second string spot and ran the way that he did without the benefit of a particular setup. I felt like he could move forward, and if he does, they might all be running for second, and he should have a setup. What did you like about Sacred Life?
You pretty much took the words right out of my mouth, and you actually picked the one. I didn't say which Chad Brown I liked, and you went right to it. That's the one I can sit down and shut up. I don't need to add anything more. I'm with everything what you just said.
That's pretty funny. It seemed like the wise guy horse, Paul. There's a reason I gave you the horse to talk about that I did in the Derby. I've hung around with you and the likes of you and Sean and Duke enough that I can be an honorary, if not actual, wise guy. How much do you like this horse? Is this a horse that you see keying around a lot, Paul, or do you figure to have some backups?
Well, I'm probably going to do some backups for sure, but I'm definitely going to say I'm going to single him, and I'm going to I'm going to use him as a primary for sure. I think he's the most likely winner in the race. I mean, it is a turf race, so you don't want to get too strung out on it, and you know, because pace can. If you watch any of these races at Saratoga, the fourth or fifth best horse wins every race, so you you know, it drives you crazy. But
I'm so glad to hear you say it. It makes me feel like makes me feel less like I've been whining all meet about Saratoga turf racing when I hear you say that.
Well, you know, it's not so bad. You know, I think the whining comes out more nowadays because of pick fours and pick fives, you know, particularly pick fives probably because, you know, you got to start narrowing and making good decisions. And, you know, like if you lose a race and you bet it in the fourth or best, and you know the fourth or fifth best horse wins, you just move on and you don't care that much.
Right.
But after you have about 2 10-to-1 shots and then you get beat when you got the best horse and the fourth horse wins, you know, then you want to whine and punch the wall, you know. That's it's a totally different mindset, you know.
I'm happy to report that I haven't punched a wall since the Oscar betting several years ago when they told me I had won and then took it away from me. I thought that was worthy of a good wall punch, personally.
That's a good one. That was worthy. You can do it. I actually haven't punched a wall in a while either. So that's
hey, Sean, how about you? When's the last time you punched a wall? And then dovetail that into your thoughts on the Turf Classic.
It's been a while since I've punched a wall, but the reason my other chair was squeaking was from physical activities related to racing. So. It happens.
Oh, amazing. What's going to happen here? Are we too keen on this Sacred Life? How does this one look? I'm going to guess this one has a nice LP.
He does. Yeah. The horse I'm going to spread in this race, not super deep, but I like Sacred Life, but I also like the maker, Mr. Dumas or Dumas, just because I've got that horse rated as just as good as all these other ones, and I think he's going to be 2 and 3 times the price of them. So, you know, using Paul's theory of the fourth or fifth best horse winning, I think that horse is going to be the best value in here based on the talent. And so I'm going to try to hook him up with Sacred Life and box him at Exactas and maybe try to get both of them in the try and in the super with some other horses. And that's how I sort of plan on playing the race.
I like that idea of a double key. And I like the point about Mr. Dumas. I mean, here's a horse that finished second to Some Like It Hot Brown last time without the benefit of any setup. I assume that's part of what your case is. But in that double key, who would you fill out with basically everything? Or are you – it seems like we're all at least semi against the likes of Factor This and Rock Emperor at the top of the market. But do you find them worthy of inclusion, Sean, or are you wholeheartedly against?
I would include Rock Emperor. I would not include Factor This. I don't like that horse. Yeah, I would definitely include Rock Emperor and the other Chad Digital Age. I might, you know, sprinkle in some other ones in here at decent prices, but I would be mainly against Factor This and Bowie's Hero in here.
Paul, what about your opinion on the ones at the top of the market, presumptive top of the market?
I would definitely use the other Chad, more so Rock Emperor than the other one. I don't know about the two speeds. At Churchill, you can kind of get away with, pitching the speeds, even if they don't go after each other. So I'm with Sean a little bit. I might pitch both of them. I might pitch Some Like It Hot and Factor This, because I don't think they're even if they got loose, I don't particularly like them. So, but I got some podcast theme that I wanted to pass along.
Please,
I did an earlier podcast, and I actually asked after we did it if anybody liked anything. And Stu from the StuCast podcast,
sure. Love Stu.
He likes the Graham Motion. True Valor.
That's funny. And I actually was going to ask you about this, just with Motion as a guy. I feel like we've seen time and time again, but paying $25 in these turf races on these big days. This one's a tricky read, first time in the barn, but what was Stu's scoop on this thing?
Well, he had a bunch of reasons why, but I think it's more like, when it comes down to it, it's kind of like the two-year-old race. It's just, have faith in Motion that he's going to run in this race. He probably had some other horses he could run, and this is the one he picked. And the fact that he's going to, go over there, I'm guessing he's not going to embarrass himself by running this horse here. So, I kind of liked it. The reasonings and the ideas of it, it's not one I would, like I said, I like the other horse better, but definitely one I would throw in. He convinced me to use him.
It's a weird-looking work tab, right? I mean, we're only showing the two Fairhill works, but that might not be indicative of the work this horse has been doing at home at Fairhill since Motion got the runner in his care. Do you have anything based on the Simon Callahan form, Sean, to make you like True Valor, or would this be a straight-up In Motion We Trust play?
He's a little weak on finish, but he has one or two races, back in the early 2019 that make his finish competitive with some of these others. And, I always sort of say if they've done it once and it wasn't under perfect scenarios, they can do it again. And they can especially do it again when things have been changed, like a barn change or an equipment change or something like that. So, definitely. I think the talent is there, and the switch to Motion can only help. I mean, that guy's a tremendous trainer.
Yeah, the European form is quite good, actually, and you could definitely see this horse, especially, an Irish bred who started the career over there, reacting very well to the more European style of training at Fairhill as opposed to, being around the racetrack. I'm convinced too. I'm throwing in True Valor for at least a penny. So we'll know who to send the whiskey to.
Right, it's all your fault, Stu, if it doesn't.
And, exactly, and we'll send the hate texts as well if the horse runs laps. No, in all seriousness, that's what's fun about these podcasts, right? Is people giving you horses to think about in a little bit of a different way. All right, we've got. In 7 minutes, it'll be an hour. So we're in great shape here to have a nice, in-depth conversation about this year's Kentucky Derby. Paul, we're going to start with you because you've tipped your hand to a strategy, which I've said on other podcasts, good artists borrow, great artists steal. I like to think the same is true of horse players. And ever since I heard you make your case on the Monster Pod for attachment rate, I had an associate in a faraway land get me a little wager each way. So I'm basically locked in on 8-1 if this horse can finish in the top three. I'm very happy with that. But the more I look at the race, and Sean, you and I talked about this the other day, the more I look at the race, every time I look at the race, I tilt a few more points on my 100% odds line in Tis the Law's direction. I just think he's going to take all the beating and the two scratches since I last talked to you, Paul, about this race with Art Collector and King Guillermo coming out only make me feel more that way. But I'd love to hear where you're standing now on attachment rate and Tis the Law and how you see betting this race.
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I like the fact that you got down earlier. So at least you could, you're getting real good odds on that with Art Collector coming out. But I think betting the race now, the fact that Art Collector is out, it kind of hurts our price and our thought process there with attachment rate, because now all the art collector people now have like gravitated to, they've all gravitated to attachment rate, yeah. You know, that like the anti Tis the Law
mm-hmm.
group and the people who like the Ellis Park Derby are all going to go with us now, where before I like the idea that maybe attachment rate could reverse on art collector, you know, which would really give us extra value, you know. With the art collector coming out, there's a lot less value on attachment rate. That's the only, that, I don't like him any less. In fact, he's probably got more of a chance, like you said, he's got more of a chance to win, and he's got more of a chance to be in it, but it's just kind of like the betting value. You hear that word thrown around a lot that we're wrongly, but this yes. is a good example of where, you know.
Pause there, Paul, and explain why. Explain why somebody says, oh, yeah, This even money shot has a great chance, but I'm going to go with something with more value. Explain why that's very often wrong.
Well, it's often used just because the horse is long odds. That's the first mistake most people make. And of all races, the Kentucky Derby has lots of long shots that have no value. You know,
exactly. Year in and they're the worst out. Value of the year. You get a lot of 200 right. to one shots at 30-1 in the Kentucky Derby.
Right, absolutely. And then yet you'll hear people say, well, this horse has value, you know.
Yeah.
And then they also make mistakes otherwise where they kind of over-hype it. You know, we're just going to pile on JKO completely on this podcast. Why not? He's not here to defend himself. But, you know, some of these short horses, some people think, well, he's value. He's going to win 99% of the time. You know, I'm getting value at 3-5 or it's a, you know, that type of thing. And a lot of times they make the mistake that in that direction as well. You know, it's solely based on, you know, it's just a kind of a way to say underlay, but in a way where you can get value like by running second or third. And attachment rate really had that idea where you could get value like in a try with art collector in the race, mm-hmm. you know, or exacta. Where now it's not that way. You know, now you got almost got to like one pop. You got to one pop it with Tis the Law, you know, or you got to be against Tis the Law completely to get any value with attention, right? As far as I can tell from the way it's going. So it's kind of like a different situation even since we've talked on the Monster Pod. Doesn't mean I don't like him. Everything I said before, I still believe. I think he's a strong contender in the race. It's just maybe a different scenario than what you and I talked about a week or two ago.
Did you have a different long shot you wanted to key instead, or was he still the one you were thinking about?
No. In fact, what I'm going to use in the hinted at earlier, when I play the horizontals, unless Cezanne wins, I'm only going to use attachment rate and Tis the Law, or I guess I would say unless it comes up to be the track that was on Wednesday there, or Tuesday, whatever day it was, where the track was really inside and I thought that Tis the Law could lose because of a bias. If I think the track is even and everything goes as well, the only two horses I'm going to use are Tis the Law and Attachment Rate. I'm going to use that kind of scenario that we talked about where I take one short one and one long one and actually single them both in two separate scenarios in pick fives, you know. So I'm playing two singles, but two different scenarios. That's kind of the idea. With you know, it's kind of a unique situation that Chris and I talked about. It's funny that he came up with it too, because it was kind of like I didn't bring it up to him. He brought it up to me, and it was funny because we both kind of came up with this idea, this kind of strategy by our, you know, separately. But it kind of gave me more confidence that I was doing it right when Chris said that he had. That he was doing it as well. So.
Chris Larmy, for those who don't know, this was a fantastic piece he did. We did a whole podcast about the piece, too, Approaches to Betting the Pick Five. If you find it, if you search for Chris Larmy on InTheMoneyPodcast.com, if you can't find the piece, tweet me. I'll send you a link, but it's going to have to be after Saturday. Just one caveat there. But I'm happy to help you find it. It was incredibly instructive, Paul, and several other very sharp players, too, had some really strong ideas about it. But again, that gets back to what we're talking about before, about not trying to make the less cookie-cutter you can make your approaches to writing your horizontal bets, the better off you're going to be. And that ability to look separately at how you're going to play Tis the Law and attachment rate in these pick fives makes an absolute ton of sense. Paul, I'm going to come back to you in a minute to talk to you about how you're going to bet this race vertically. But first, I want to go to Sean and just confirm. I believe you said before you are going to, in your horizontals, be 100% through Tis the Law. Is that the case? Could the Cezanne result change your mind on that?
That is my plan as of right now, yes. I really just think he's much the best and figure to get the best trip too. So I don't see him getting beat, but you know, by the time Saturday afternoon rolls around, I reserve the right to change my mind. But I, as of right now, I plan on 100% through him.
Will you have an eye towards bias, as Paul indicated, as a potential way that he could get beat? If ground loss really means something, the fact that he's very likely to be at the best case scenario, three wide, two wide, could that upset your certainty of vision for him?
I mean, it certainly could, yes, but I think it would have to be a very severe bias. And if that's the case, then that almost makes this race unplayable to me. I mean, if it's strong enough to where, you know, I sort of envision him working out that sort of three wide, three and a half wide, close to the pace, you know, Derby winning trip that we've seen so often lately. And if the rail is as golden to stop that on much the best horse, then that opens up any result in this race, in my opinion. So it's hard to handicap that way. You know, it's maybe I would pick one or two other horses that I think, you know, are live at a price and stick them in. But, you know, if I think he's going to get beat by bias, then I've got to look at Max Player and some of these inside horses I don't like all that much to throw in there too. And I just don't really want to do that, you know. So I'm just going to stick with my opinion and hope it's right.
Right, and then you always do have that idea, even though it's the Derby, there's still no rule that you can't pass if you're not feeling good about what the track is doing. Hopefully between now and Saturday afternoon, we'll all have the clarity that we can bet what we want to on this race. Let's talk about the verticals for a minute, Paul. How do you see playing it? It almost sounded when you were talking about the cold punch that you might be thinking about playing a one-way 17-13 in this spot. What else do you see yourself doing in the verticals?
Well, I'll definitely reverse it. You know, I'll definitely be in that box if all things go, you know, like if I was playing it today. I just want to mention, you know, about this post. You know, I guess King Guillermo coming out probably helps Tis the Law. Most people probably don't think that, but I think it definitely helps him because I think it's more likely that he will get the trip that that Sean was talking about, where I wasn't convinced he was going to get that kind of scenario with more speed in there. And I'm really curious to see what comes about with Baffert, what he's going to do. He's pretty much got the two speeds besides Paco. You know, Paco Lopez might take a chance at both of the Baffert horses going to the lead.
He could mess them up pretty good, couldn't he? You know, you could see them as a little wedge out there, but Paco might have something to say about that. Yeah, you know, the idea of them,
and that's a good horse too. And you know, he let the 18 go last time. He let Authentic go at Monmouth, but it was kind of a weird situation where New York traffic broke out at the start, and it was a short field, and he was probably happy just to sit and stalk him. But from coming down from 15, he's got to be aggressive anyway, you know. So if he gets going and is aggressive, it may play out. I don't think they're going to go fast, but it may not go just totally as scripted, you know, that the 18's just out there on a short lead and Tis the Law stalking him, you know. Tis the Law. I'm the only person in this world that didn't like this draw for him, because he's immediately going to get crossed over on, and he's got Paco to his left who's going to show speed in front of him, and he's unpredictable about how he's not, I shouldn't say unpredictable, he's not conventional in the way he rides speed horses. He'll stay out in front of them if they, you know, the 15 and 18, might stay right smack in front of him for the whole run, you know, to the first turn, you know. And he's also got Honor AP to his inside, and Mike Smith pretty much rides that horse like the wider the better. So, you know, he's got some things he's got to negotiate as far as trip-wise. I also agree with Sean that he is the best horse. And we talked about this a little bit on the podcast. The only thing that I think that he's got to answer to is the law. Unfortunately, this isn't the toughest field ever. But, you know, he's done everything, and he looks great, and he's done everything well. But he hasn't beaten anything, you know. They used to give Seattle Slough a hard time because he didn't beat any grade one horses. I mean, none of these horses that Tis the Law has run against have won. Forget grade ones. I mean, it's unbelievable if you go back and look at the competition that he's faced. They've almost won no races in the last for his whole career, you know, every horse that he's beaten, you know. So with that said, you know, that's why I'm not totally convinced like other sharp handicappers like my brother Duke thinks that he can't lose, and Sean and they think he's the best horse that's come along in a long time. I have a little bit of doubt because of that. And then throw into the fact that there's a chance, like Sean said earlier, I could see him being four or five wide in this race. You know, and if you don't like Bellafina being four or five wide and you don't like CeCe being four or five wide, you know, I'm not thrilled with Tis the Law being four or five wide either at 3-5, you know, and having all your money sent to him. So I think there is some little questions there. It's not like that strong that I would say bet against him, you know, that type of thing. But I don't want to give the impression that it's like, you know, that we're watching a coronation of, you know, and it's just completely over. You know, that's kind of my thought process on that. As far as the verticals, I would just advise everybody, don't play this like a normal derby. You know, I don't know on Sean's scale, but I've got, you know, there's about 10 horses in here that have never run fast enough to hit to run fourth.
Yeah.
You know, and the chance of them improving in their September of the year, of the three-year-old year, are not very strong. You know, you're not going to get a bump of a horse who runs 90 buyers all of a sudden run 103. It happens once in a while, but don't count on it. And it would be shocking if one of them did it to me in this race. So it's not that type of race where, you know. And the other thing about all these horses are none of them have any speed. They're all going to sit back and try to close into Tis the Law and Honor AP who finish good. You know, I mean, you know, you're not going to. I don't know. I just say stay tight. Like I was kind of trying to say before earlier, especially with Art Collector and King Guillermo out now, they were kind of the two horses that maybe could have made. If you were against them, they could have put some value into the gimmicks. You know, pick maybe one long shot like that you think like South Bend or Max Player, and you know maybe throw them in for third or fourth. But don't go using 12, 14 horses for fourth. You know, and 8 horses for third. You know, I think I used the one example I told you one year where Charismatic, I used 11 horses with him second and third, fourth, and didn't hit it because that's how sometimes these are so far wide open. You know,
that's amazing.
I don't think this is that case.
So keeping the tickets fairly tight, being very open to being basically against Thousand Words and Honor AP if Cezanne runs poorly, and then maybe putting them in the mix if he runs well. But basically for you, it sounds like you want to see, when this trifecta numbers get posted, you want to see a 17 in there and a 13 in there. What about you, Sean? We talked the other day about a potential long shot. It sounded like you were maybe willing to do at least some bottom-up keying with. How have your thoughts evolved about these verticals in this year's Kentucky Derby?
You know, I completely agree with what Paul said, that this is not a spread Kentucky Derby. There's, you know, he said 10 horses. There may be 12 horses in this field to me that just don't have a chance. Maybe they run fourth, but I just don't. The race really narrows down, in my opinion, and some of the horses that it narrows down to are big prices. So, you know, I'm going to, the first bet I make is going to be 17 over 813 Tri, just ice cold and large, because I really like South Bend, and I really, you know, once I listened to Paul's case for attachment rate and dug into his PPs more, I couldn't agree more with what he said. That horse looks like he's sitting on a huge race to me. And, you know, I think they're both going to be great value. And I just don't, you know, some of these short priced horses, I don't like at all. I mean, I can't stand Thousand Words. And I'm not going to use Thousand Words if Cezanne wins by 10. And I'm, you know, the thing about the Cezanne race is, you know, if he wins impressively or even runs impressively, it probably means my figure's too low. But I'm still probably going to pitch those horses coming out of that race just because of the value. I think if you can beat Honor AP, who's going to be a wise guy, short price, then I think it's just worth taking that chance in this race. So, you know, I don't anticipate them being on any of my tickets. And, you know, I've just got like two or three other horses that I'm even interested in using past South Bend and attachment rate underneath Tis the Law.
Who would the others be for you, Sean?
I'm going to throw in Max Player. I think he can improve enough to run underneath. And I'll use Authentic just off the trip he's probably going to get.
Feels like a likely probably, best speed, yes?
Yeah, possibly. I'm not convinced. New York traffic can't be the best speed, and that's the only other one I'm going to use. Mm-hmm. Just because I don't see – there's not a ton of pace in this race. And there's – you know, it's like Paul said, like these other horses are going to have to really improve, and they're going to have to run down horses that are going to be way in front of them and are just better than them anyway. So it just doesn't set up for total chaos to me. So, you know – I'll flip it some. I'll use Tis the Law second with some of these longer prices I like, and that gives me protection in the horizontals where I'm probably going to be cold singled that way. So that's going to be my strategy.
What is your thought on the points that Paul made about the potential difficulty of trip for Tis the Law between the way Mike Smith is likely to ride Honor AP, Paco Lopez, the possibility of him messing with him by keeping New York traffic wide. And let us not forget, though I don't think it's going to happen by any means, the possibility of Authentic Byroning Tis the Law on his mad scramble to get to the lead. I'm not changing the way I'm going to bet. I'm keeping my opinion where it is, but I am feeling suddenly a little bit of anxiety about the 17, just when Paul mentions the specifics of the riders around Manny Franco and Tis the Law.
Yeah, no, I think they're all good points. And I think, you know, this is the kind of race where you've got an overwhelming favorite and guys will try to ride to beat that horse possibly. So I think, you know, all very good points, but, you know, Tis the Law has overcome bad trips and bad rides before and was still able to do it. And I just don't think this field is that good. So in my mind, it's going to have to be a pretty considerable amount of trouble for him not to be able to overcome it. You know, he's gotten very tactical and much quicker early on my pace figures in his last few races and has a much better finish than he did previously when he was encountering this trouble. And, you know, to me, he's just talented enough to overcome some of these things where, you know, I wouldn't want to be on Authentic and think that he could come into all this trouble because I don't think he's good enough. And, you know, the wide trip and all this, he's just talented enough to overcome stuff like that to me where horses like CC and Bellafina aren't. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference in my mind.
And Paul's point about the form not being strong, you're so number oriented that you're just not worried about that. You believe he's as good as the sectionals say, as the final time say, as the visual impression is, even if any of them haven't won any other races.
Yeah, I do. And I, you know, who have any of these damn horses beat? I mean, there aren't, you know, past a couple horses and most of the good horses have gotten injured and aren't in this race. So, I mean, it's true, but he's done what a good horse should do against inferior competition. He's just buried them, and he's finished fast, and he's run fast overall, and he's tactical, and he's overcome some adversity in some of these races. So that doesn't bother me that much. You can only beat who they put in front of you to beat, and he's done it almost every time. So,
one last question for you, Paul. Where do you want to see Tis the Law positioned, at the pace call in this race? Sort of surprisingly to me, the Timeform pace projector has him, I think, eighth at the pace call. I can't imagine he'll be anywhere near that far back. Where would you, from his point of view, from wanting to see him win point of view, where would you want him to be?
I think if it goes perfect for him, he's going to sit. He'll be sitting third on outside the two horses that ran at Monmouth. I don't know exactly what Thousand Words will do. If he goes and sends crazy and they try to hang out Tis the Law, which is possible with Baffert, that might be a situation. Then he might be fourth. I think the problem might come for Tis the Law is if Honor AP gets in his way. You know, I think ideally what you want to see Tis the Law forward. You want to see him out there stalking a slow pace. That if he stalks a slow pace and he gets to where he did in the Travers, you know, after actually the Belmont, his last couple races, you knew he was going to win about, you know, eight strides into the race. You know, if he gets into that same type of position, you know, and he's traveling like that, they're going to have a hard time. And I agree with what Sean said. I just, you know, the thing you got to remember is that he's 3-5, you know, sure. and he's going to be probably less than that in pick fives. I would say his win odds will be higher than what he is in the horizontals. So if your idea is that you're going to single him in horizontals, you're not, you know, you got to go with the assumption that he's a really short favorite. And I'm just giving you some ideas of why he could lose, where on paper, you can't argue with anything Sean's saying. He looks like, you know, it's a foregone conclusion he's going to win. I mean, I compare him to Seattle Slough, but don't forget, Seattle Slough won the Triple Crown.
Exactly. You know, it's not an unflattering comparison. Like,
you know, it's not like, it wasn't like that. These horses can definitely, and I expect them to. I mean, that's the other thing. I expect them to beat this kind of field. This is not a huge challenge for him. But there are some things there that aren't ideal, and I'm just pointing them out because, you know, if you start doing these models, you know, and handicapping, you know, finding long shots that are 8% to win versus when they're 3% to win, you know, you can kind of do it. But trying to figure out, I found it very hard, when you start thinking about, is this horse a 75% chance of winning, or is he a 72% chance of winning? Or is he an 84% chance of winning? You know, that you got to start nitpicking almost, yeah. You know, when it gets to that.
That's the game
level,
we're playing. You know? That's the game we're playing with this horse. And you made a couple of interesting follow-ups. I swear I'll let you guys go eventually. But again, having too much fun as I approach the 14th hour of my workday. One thing about Tis the Law, and you made that great point about, I think the sharper pools, they're more like serious horse players. I think he will be shorter. I have this crazy theory that between the people betting names, numbers, and narratives, you might even see 4-5 in the win play show. We talked about this on the show the other day, Sean, that it's still not your, it's just not your betting personality to take 4-5 on the horse, even if it should be 1-5, and you'll still look to hook the horse up in gimmicks. But I mean, if that happens, Paul, would you consider potentially simplifying things a little bit and dutching a little bit of win money?
I guess that's why I'm saying I won't. I'm going to guess my brother Duke will, though. You know, he didn't join us on this, but I just know his opinion, and he doesn't think he's going to lose. He's kind of exactly the way that Sean is, and I can't blame anybody for having that opinion. So my guess is that my brother Duke he'll take 4-5 and he'll play it, you know. I'm not 100% there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you've made some good points, no doubt about it. And you know, I think you've described the mindset that a professional horse player kind of needs to have, where you're allowing for the possibility that he's the best horse, but you're smartly trying to defend yourself a little bit too and think of other scenarios. So I think it's great. I mean, I think it's a lively and interesting discussion, and hopefully it's helping people out there listening, trying to formulate their plans for Saturday. My next question for you is, how do you remember so much about Seattle Slough and how he was perceived back in 1977 when I think you were all of 7 years old? Were you already a proper degenerate in first grade?
Well, it's probably more a little bit in retro, you know, but I do have some remembrances of Seattle Slough. It's kind of the first, I don't have any remembrances of anything before that. It's kind of like my first horse that I got into, so I kind of know.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, Andy Beyer was like, you know, king of the world right about that time. I met him right around that time at the Great Barrington Fair when I was 7 or 8 years old. So I think I met him right that year, you know, even though I was just a little kid. And so that's why I kind of have a remembrance of it. And, you know, I think they wrongly didn't understand. I didn't realize this until probably watched the ESPN documentary on him. You know, they should have given up on questioning him after the Derby.
Yes.
You know, his Derby, he overcome everything in the Derby, you know.
Yes.
I think nowadays they wouldn't have carried on with it. But he didn't run any big speed figures. I do know that back then. And, you know, just kind of – I kind of like – what I like to do – on these bigger races, I don't do it necessarily from day to day, but on these bigger races, I have an historical view more. And JK and I talked about this one day for a couple hours, where I was trying to, I like to look at the Derby in an historical sense, and because it happens at the same year, and you got to try to predict what happens. It's a yearly thing, and when I've been on these other podcasts, I've been trying to stress that it's not the same because of it, because it's in a different time of the year.
Yes.
You know, it's more of, I mean, if you go back in time of most three-year-olds by September, the question is, who is the best three-year-old has already long been decided. And maybe he's got another one. Maybe there's two of them or something that, but the bigger question is, can the three-year-old beat the older horses?
Yep.
You know, and I think that's more the mindset. And that's why you have really good handicappers like Sean and my brother, who have already determined who the best three-year-old is, you know, because, and they're going to be right most of the time, you know. I guess the only thing that I'm pointing out is it's still an 18-horse race on a quirky track with not the best scenario, you know, like it may not be the best scenario, you know, type of thing. You know, it's like, you know, I'm trying to give examples, you know, historically, but, you know, like Bernardini, by the time September came around, you know, he would have been 2-5 to win the September Derby, you know. But would you have played him if he got post 19 or, you know, yeah, you know, or, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, he got beat by a bias in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So, you know, things happen. You know, it's still horse racing, but it's different. It's inherently different than the May Derby.
Yeah, you don't have to look that far in the past. I mean, Arrogate, another example of a September Derby winner. You know, it's things change and develop as time goes on. This has been so much fun, guys. I will now finally let you go as we approach 90 minutes on the show, but I don't think anybody's complaining. What great stuff from the both of you. I want to thank you, Paul Matisse, and I want to especially thank you, Sean Borman, because this was more or less your idea to reconvene this panel from the Breeders' Cup, and just personally, one of my favorite shows I've ever done. Just so great to hear you guys talking about your approach to these races. Hopefully, we help the people out there and are going to have a great day ourselves. So one more time, thank you, Sean. Thank you, Paul. This was basically bonus coverage. I'm going to leave it ad-free. I'm just going to go right to thanking all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. Hopefully, we can help you out in our coverage of this year's Derby. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Kentucky Derby photos.